Hi, this is Angela Pearley of Angela Pearley and the Howling Moons, and you're listening to Pickup Country 104.9 FM, your one-of-a-kind, all-of-the-time station.
Hey guys, I'm really excited to share with you an interview I was able to catch this week with Blake Berglund and Belle Plaine, both from Saskatchewan, Canada. I consider them honorary Kentuckians. I first met them at Kicking It on the Creek 2017. It was the first time I'd heard either of them play or sing, and they're making authentic country music in Canada, believe it or not. But really enjoyed having them in the studio. We talked about a whole range of topics, but they also played some great music for us. I hope you will enjoy it. Here they are. If you have a chance to see them, they're going to tell you where you can find all their music and where they're touring and things like that. So go check them out, Blake Berglund and Belle Plaine. Here they are. Well, good afternoon and welcome to Bluegrass Breakout here on Pickup Country 104.9 FM, WSKV. My name is Angela. I'm going to be with you until 3 o'clock, spinning you the latest and the greatest of all kinds of music that we're hearing here in the Bluegrass. Folks that are visiting, folks that are from here, in case you missed it, Miss Chelsea last night was on the Jerry Springer podcast. And no, I'm not kidding. She was on the Jerry Springer podcast and it was incredible. And they even asked her about her doing Tradio. As you all know, she's been coming in and helping us fill in on Tradio, where AC has been out with medical problems. And it's been awesome having her here, but I totally did not expect anybody to ask her about her time here at Tradio. And so she told them all about Tradio. And I think we had a few more listeners from all over this morning as a result. But that was great. And, of course, Miss Chelsea is doing all kinds of great things. She's going to be tonight at Skybridge Station. And I have in the studio, you guys are not going to believe this, but I have a couple of folks here with me who are a long, long, long way from home. You hear them on Saturday nights during Kicking It. They have performed at Kicking It on the Creek 2 years in a row, and I was very fortunate to meet them their first year. It was my first year as well. Please welcome Blake Berglund and Belle Plaine. Welcome you guys to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It is so good to have you all here. And you're actually in the area coming from Tennessee.
Yes.
So what's been going on in Tennessee?
We went down for an event in Chattanooga that we were invited to and played down there and met a bunch of folks from that area. And then Blake had Laurel Cove. That is happening this weekend. And then we just filled the middle of it with some shows and with some traveling and seeing some friends. And we usually have a band in tow behind us, but it's just the two of us this time. So we could be a bit more flexible mm-hmm. and not worry about looking after three guys in the van with us. So we've just been kind of just knocking around a few states here. It's been really fun.
I'd say. Now, you've been in Tennessee. Where else have you been besides Kentucky?
Go ahead, Blake.
Besides Kentucky, on this trip, we spent a little bit of time in West Virginia. We were invited to go to the Mount Music Fest up mm-hmm. there. So we spent the weekend up there just seeing incredible acts and incredible people. It was super fun. Hung in Nashville for a little bit. We've been making a habit of trying to get into this neck of the woods pretty consistently over the last few years. It's been really good to us. So we're pretty loyal to our return, consistent mm-hmm. returning. And I mean, outside of that, it's kind of been the last 2.5, 3 years where we've taken sort of our brand of Canadian country and been imposing it in the southern United States and en route throughout. We've been shows in Chicago, shows in, oh geez, you just start naming them, down in Alabama. I was lucky to get in Louisiana a little bit, some Texas. I've toured with Culture Wall pretty consistently mm-hmm. down here. Belle did some touring with Culture over in Europe, but you haven't played any American dates with him. I guess
nope.
We did in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, we played, and Tyler.
We yeah, played with Tyler,
fun.
And, Tyler and Tyler and Coulter in Charlotte one night. And yeah, it's just been, we keep returning because we've been treated so well and we're enamored by the people. And it truthfully, it reminds us a lot of home. It's very similar in many ways. So it's very welcoming getting down here.
Well, that's good to hear. Speaking of Canadian country, talk to us about Canadian country because we do play... we've been playing Culture Wall for several years now. My first introduction to Canadian country was Cor Blund.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, it was a fella in the area who was maybe 2 or 3 years older than me, but he was a big fan. And we used to have a request show in the middle of the day, and he called one day, and he says, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but there's this song you've got to hear. It's by a Canadian cowboy. And I was like, there are Canadian cowboys? I didn't know that. And so I was completely just fascinated. I said, okay, so what is it? So he had me play Horse Soldier.
Perfect.
And I fell in complete love. I'm like, this is amazing, because it sounded like so much more country than anything on what was called country radio at the time, you know. And, of course, we play classic country. We don't play any of the really new bro country or any of that. And it fits so well with our format that I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and put this in our library, because this is something that our listeners will enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so the more of Corb Lund that I heard, the more it was like, let's slide some more of this in the library. This is good. And then we started to get in tune with what Coulter Wall was doing. And again, response was very, very good. It was like, who is this? I like this. This is country.
Yeah.
So what is Canadian country? How does that come to be?
That's a loaded question. I mean, mentioning someone like Corb Lund, I wouldn't go as far as saying he's a godfather to the sounds, but he's been around for a few decades, and he definitely sort of brought a popularity throughout Canada recently with his style of sort of that old school approach and an effort in lyrics. Mm-hmm. He's just a phenomenal wordsmith, and you mentioned Horse Soldier. That's one of my personal favorite Corb songs. But it's a long Canadian lineage. Like, we have Hank Snow is a Canadian, Wilf Carter's a Canadian, and they go back to the early 50s and late 40s. As far as contemporary Canadian country music, it is rather split, just like it is down here. There's cats that I would put people like Coulter or Corb or Bell or myself in a category of really being, trying to be as artistic as we can be, with also being as accessible as we can be in the music. And then, just like, you know, any other corporate or mainstream thing, there's a really large corporate country music community in Canada that, you know, you try and be a part of, you try and sort of contribute to, but it's gatekeepers, and it's, you know, the cats that they want in, they let in and champion, and, you know, it is split right now, I would say.
So I guess what you're telling me then is, like, here, you know, we have what they're calling country and what we call outlaw country, that is more authentic traditional country, which is weird how that becomes outlaw, but
sure,
you kind of have that similar
thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, Canada and the United States are very, very similar in so many aspects, and sort of the popularity of country music and the split down the middle as to the ones that are sitting on the fringe and a resistance towards sort of a lack of lyrical effort, and the ones that sort of put a little more effort into the lyric. I you know, I should be careful what I say, because I do have a lot of friends in both communities, and each to their own. I've just found that my sound, just I can't quite fit it into the parameters that is demanded in order to be a part of the corporate country scene in Canada.
Understand that. Now both of you, have you always been drawn to that country sound? Is that something you started with, or did you start in some other kind of?
Yeah, we both have a very different background, and the fact that we're doing music that's similar, I mean, was a bit of an accident. But I grew up in a rural area on a farm in Saskatchewan, and so the first things that I was listening to was like Reba McEntire and Marty Stewart and Dolly Parton and that kind of stuff on AM radio. And to me, those were people that were kind of, you know, second wave country musicians that were revitalizing what had been done, you know, in the early, like the Hank Williams era. And so there was still this beautiful songwriting and interest in telling story and having an emotional impact. And so that's what I grew up listening to. And then, of course, as a teenager, I lost interest in that and started listening to things, you know, that were like Radiohead and Portishead and just like weird, you know, weird stuff that teenagers like and I still kind of like. And then I kind of veered off the road. I went to college and studied jazz music and contemporary music. And that really affected me as a songwriter. So I actually have the first album that I put out that's full length, has a 1940s jazz feel to it, but they're all original songs. So they're in the style of like Peggy Lee, Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I like to write in a chord structure that has like I like interesting melodies, and I like to write the melody and then work with collaborators to kind of build the scaffolding under the melody so that it has that interesting jazz structure, but also has the songwriting influences and stories of prairie people, of you know, people like myself that have stories. Mm-hmm. And that's my background. That's kind of how this last album came about, was through that channel. So Blake's got a different side of things too.
Well, my roots are almost identical to Bell's. I come from, you know, a small rural Saskatchewan community where AM radio was king. So it was George Strait. Almost strictly George Strait in the tractor and in the barn and mm-hmm. in the house. It was Neil Diamond and ABBA and Meatloaf. From there, I kind of found my way into grunge music. So what was happening in Seattle in the 90s when I was about 15, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I was never a child that was full of angst or anything, but I was really attracted to the aggression in the vocals and the aggression in the chord structure and the intelligence in the writing. Mm-hmm. So that was like the biggest musical influence for me. And I played that style of music right up into my mid-20s, toured Canada continuously for about a decade in sort of this pseudo-metal, hard rock,
wow,
progressive band. And then it was... I give credit to Willie Nelson, but Willie Nelson's kind of like Jesus Christ. Everybody knows who he is, but not many truly know what it's about or what mm-hmm. he speaks of, kind of thing. And it was sort of that Texas singer-songwriter, Joe Ely and La Love and Willie Nelson, Christopherson, that when I started to be exposed to that in my late 20s, I was kind of late to the game with country music, and it was really attractive. It was the songwriting that was attractive. From that point, I sort of started putting these pieces back together with my childhood and be like, oh, and George Strait. Well, I mean, I can get into that. Right. So there was this, I still carry this really nostalgic affinity to 90s country, which, you know, and since in our careers, we've had the pleasure of playing with acts like Dwight Yoakam and Marty Stewart, and mm-hmm. and especially Marty Stewart. It was just like this full circle moment, being able to share a stage right. with someone like Marty Stewart. And then you kind of, all of a sudden, you find yourself in this, like Bell said, you find yourself in this melding pot of influences, and you do your best to take the liberties within the genre that you're fitting in. So as far as country music goes, I would be the first to say I am country, and I'd be the first to say that I'm maybe not anything like it. It's we're doing our very best to sort of take what we can take from the genre and move it forward, you know, in the most humble way that we possibly can.
Fantastic. It's so funny that you were talking about kind of being late to the country game. I have a very similar experience in that I think it was for me a spirit of rebellion, because country was what my parents listened to.
Mm-hmm.
I could not make myself like it. And when I came to work here at the station, we're a country and bluegrass station. If you'd asked me before I started here what kind of music I listened to, I would tell you, oh, I can listen to anything but bluegrass or country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And after about 2 months of being here, that's all I wanted to fill my brain with, was country, these songs, just the stories. So much about it, it's so natural. It's almost like that's a part of who I am because I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to come this whole full circle. The grunge music, I can relate to that too. I mm-hmm. thought Kurt Cobain was a god when that sound came out. I didn't have a lot of angst either, but I could sure grab a hold of that and feel it with him, you know?
Totally.
And so it's really neat that we have similar experiences with that. Well, listen, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, I actually want to kick off after this break with one of my favorite songs by Bell. It's Layla Sadie Johnson, Wasn't Beaten by No Train.
That's right.
When you did that at Kicking It on the Creek and you led up with the story, I was just blown away, because the story itself, and I want you to kind of get into that whenever we come back, but we're going to hear that immediately after hearing from our sponsors. And we are in studio with Blake Berglund and Bell Plain. You all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In the long days of the summertime outside a prairie town, near a mixed farm in Saskatchewan, our story is set down. A matriarch of seven has
a tale you can't match. It begins when she set out to check on her potato patch. It begins when she set out to check on her potato patch. Towards an unmarked intersection shaded by brushing pie came the pride of their dominion, the Canadian Pacific Line. Her spurts grew on the other side, at last she did stop. But her gaze was stolen by the side of a bumper berry grub. Her gaze was stolen by the side of a bumper berry grub. When she saw that train of berry down, she fell down to the floor. But that beast still got the tail gained up for silver half time four. Now the Sadie Johnson wasn't beaten by no train. Says claim. No, the impact was brutal, the soul that they would save. Lila Sadie Johnson wasn't beaten by no train. Lila Sadie Johnson wasn't beaten by no train. In the farmyard stood a witness who knew I laid a fire. To her he bowed in earnest in the fall of 49. He watched the train advance and work. For he feared today would be the day that death would do them part. He feared today would be the day that death would do them part. Then the good coffin of a wreckage echoed through the countryside. Her dear husband wondered, could Lila have survived?
Lila Sadie Johnson wasn't beaten by no train.
And that was Belle Plaine at Kicking It on the Creek 2018. Tell us the story behind this song, because I love it.
Thank you. Well, it's a true story. It's about my grandmother, Lila Sadie Johnson. In the 1980s, she was, as it's all in the song, in the 1980s, she was going out to check on her potato patch. She had to cross a highway. She had to cross a set of railroad tracks. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm from a rural part of Saskatchewan. So there she was. There's no bells. There's no arm that comes down. Nothing like that. I think something you folks can relate to out here. And when she was stopped at the tracks, it was sort of a brushy area. And she stopped. It was a secondary road. Got maybe a bit distracted by some berries that were across the railroad tracks. had her eye on them. And then when she went across the tracks in her periphery, she saw the train was coming and it was 100% going to hit her. It was just a matter of where and when. So she hit the gas and made it over the tracks. But that truck that she had, she's driving this old pickup truck that I remember had this extra long box on it. So the truck did not clear the tracks. The train hit her. And the truck went for a good spin. Whole world kind of spun a little faster for her in that moment. And she walked away without a scratch. So, yeah, so there she was, this incredible story that I remember from being a little girl. And it kind of came to mind when I was taking some time off one winter. And there was just kind of a clarity that I wanted to write the chorus. And it came pretty quick. And then I realized I didn't actually know that much about what happened. So I had to spend all of this time researching. And grandma's, you know, she's going to turn 90 in February. She's doing great. We just talked on the phone last night, but she doesn't like a lot of attention. So it took a bit of time to convince her that this was a good idea. Now she's all in. You know, I told her last night when we were on the phone that there was a message from our friend that we were staying with that she wanted to deliver. And that was that's her favorite song on the album, mm-hmm. the one about Grandma Lila. And Grandma just sort of, you know, she could tell she was smirking on the other end of the phone and didn't say much about it still. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's whenever my guitar is out at home, she makes a request, mm-hmm. especially if there's company around, that I should play her song. And right. she also wonders why the royalty checks for the songwriting has not shown up at her door yet.
So, that's great. Yeah. That is great. All right. Well, you mentioned that you're going to be at Laurel Cove this weekend, correct?
Yes.
And will it be your first time at the festival down there?
Yeah, it'll be our first time. I believe it was John Grace saw us play a fundraiser in Lexington this past February. And very quickly after the show, as the programmer for the festival, he kind of got a hold of us and invited us down to be a part of everything. So that's just kind of what I mean. Like, everybody here has been so supportive and has connected with what we're putting out there, and we're just forever grateful. So yeah, we're going to be playing Friday night. I guess that's tomorrow night, mm-hmm. at 6 p.m.
Now tell folks about the show tonight, because it's a free show. I understand mm-hmm. nobody pays admission to get in. They're going to be serving, I think, hot dogs and things that you can buy. But I mean, normally you pay a cover to get in to see a good show. But tonight it's going to be you guys and Chelsea for yeah. free.
For free, yeah. We've been doing ticket sales throughout the states. We've been doing that kind of thing over the last few years. And I think Skybridge is just excited to champion culture and champion some outside culture. And for them to make it a free admission is pretty admirable. So, mm-hmm. yeah, we just would love it if people took the time to swing on down and drink some beers and eat some food and spend the evening with us. I don't know if we're up first or Chelsea's up first, but one of us are up first and the other's up second.
It's going to be great either way.
Yeah. It's going to be
whenever
really
we play with Chelsea, it seems like we just all get together before the show and make up our game plan, mm-hmm. and off we go, you know.
Before the show, as in when we're about to step
yeah,
on
exactly.
stage.
Yeah, exactly. That's before the show.
That's yeah, right. The Chelsea Nolan way.
Yes. Yes,
yeah, we
is.
Love her.
We've learned a lot about being down here, you know, just kind of showing up and knowing that it's going to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. When I first started doing music, that was not my approach. So it's kind of been nice these last couple of years of traveling here to learn and trust and know that there's so much knowledge in this area of just how to have a show, respond mm-hmm. to a show, treat musicians, that, you know, it's taken a lot off my shoulders in terms of worrying about planning out the details. So had you talked to me 2 years before the show, I probably would have been a ball of nerves. And now I'm like, yes, fine. Chelsea will be there.
Exactly. All right. Well, I'm trying to think of some other things that I had a whole list in my mind of things that I wanted to ask you. But right now they're kind of escaping me. We talked earlier a little bit about kicking it on the creek, and you had mentioned the community that down here and how it is so different, and how especially kicking it on the creek and Byron and his family. Just that culture and how it is so loving toward musicians and appreciative of each other, not just the musicians, but it is a community. Your first introduction to Byron Roberts, how did that happen? Where was that? And how did playing Kicking It on the Creek even come to be?
It's a very long cosmic story, as many things with Byron Roberts tend to be, as I understand. I recorded a record that I released in September of 2017 called Realms. It was recorded in 2016. I started March 9th of 2016, and we wrapped everything up the 31st of August 2016. And it took a lot out of me. It's kind of a heavy record. It touches on some pretty personal topics. And I just didn't have the energy in me to move into the next phase of marketing it and putting it out there and crossing my fingers and booking the shows. And I felt that I needed a little bit of quote-unquote time off. And I had 6 weeks without a show. So instead of staying at home, for a long time I was talking to Belle about just, for lack of better words, needing to leave. And I didn't even really know what that meant, whether it meant head back to my family farm for a little bit or go camp. Like, I didn't know what it meant. And she was really supportive with this idea of, like, you know, do what you need to do. There's been, and prior to that, it was about a four-year period of just, like, nose to the grindstone, hard hustle, about 100 shows a year sort of thing. So I was, lack of better words, completely burnt out after the recording process. So I jumped in the vehicle and I left and I headed south. I didn't know if I was going to head west, south, where I was going to go first. And I made it across the American border. I'd never spent any time in Nashville. That was sort of a loose plan. I was like, maybe I'll go see what the whole Nashville scene's about and whatnot. And I got to Minneapolis. And I heard that there was Lucky Tubb was playing a performance at Lee's Liquor Lounge, and he's Ernest Tubb's great nephew. So I was like, that'll be a cool show to check out. I didn't have any intent to catch live music, but and he was such a character, and it was such a wild show. Like, things were happening where he was arguing with the sound man to the point where they both stepped outside together in the middle of the show. with a band still playing and a crowd still attentive, and this is like such a wild story. So the next day I figured, you know, if I'm going to be away from my work with my music, maybe I should just be like, still work my chops a little bit. So I went to my blog, which I hadn't paid any attention to in a handful of years. And I wrote about my experience the night before. And it was really cathartic. It was a nice writing exercise. Shared it on my social media, and it sort of got its shares and its likes and some comments, and, you know, a few people enjoyed the writing and whatnot, and it was rather flattering. So I headed to Chicago. I hunted out another show. I went to it. I wrote about it that night, and out of nowhere, I kind of shifted my website into this sort of like performance review thing, but I didn't want to be pretentious about it. It was just sort of my personal experience. Mm-hmm. So opposed to it just being just the music, it was more about my travels. And as it progressed, and as I got tens of thousands of words into this writing project that I didn't see coming, I was also just kind of like riding the winds. And that was sort of the gist of it, was like, I have nowhere to be. I got 6 weeks. I'm going to check out some tunes. I'm going to be honest with the representation of the people I'm meeting and whatnot. And I described it as being kind of a Saving Country Music meets a Hunter S. Thompson meets a Lord of the Rings. Like, there was this weird, like, there's this weird magic to the whole thing that was being expressed through it. Like, just synchronistic and phenomenal things were happening. And I titled it The Quest for Real Country Music. I sort of pitted myself as this conquester and hunting for something that I didn't know what I was hunting for, and taking clues along the way. And be darned, I somehow ended up in Kentucky by a tip, and they're like, you got to check out this festival. It's the second year.
Well, you can't leave that tip unnamed.
Oh, absolutely.
Legend in and
yeah,
of himself.
Yeah, the tip, yeah, legend. W.B. Walker has an old soul radio show.
Yes.
So W.B. was a fan of Coulter's and heard of what we were doing. So I was in touch with W.B. He mentioned that he had some tickets to Sturgill in Ashland, Kentucky. We went to that together. I ran into Sturgill in a Starbucks. Like, all this crazy, weird things were happening with quote-unquote real country music. And about 3 years ago, it was just the very beginning of this wave that's hammering us right now, and it still has a long ways to go. And I want to be careful about exhausting this story, because I've told it a lot, but it's it's wonderful. And I ended up, you know, in Barnes Haller, and I was this random Canadian writing about just sort of my traveling experience, and everybody was like, you got to hear the headliner, like, this guy will blow your socks off, kind of thing. And spoke spoke Tyler up, and this was pre-Purgatory, right? So he had a phenomenal fan base in this area, and it was truly magic. I mean, I became a fan very quickly. I saw his performance, and it was astounding. You folks had 1,000 people singing every word, and I'm like, is this it? Is this like the climax to my blog? Like, I found the
right.
This is the quest.
The angels were singing.
Well, and then isn't it nice to look back on that and be like, I think I did. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was it, and this is it. Mm-hmm. And in that movement that Tyler's created, it's created this wake that artists like Arlo McKinley and the Buffalo Wobs and all these cats that he's sharing his opportunities, and it's he's spearheading it, I think we can all agree on. But there's this wake of artists that are just Chelsea, like, just you could just go on and on, that's mm-hmm. that's coming at it. And at that point, the blog really took off, and a lot of people were sharing it, and it was getting some good recognition. It was actually getting more recognition than any music I had ever put out in a decade. Mm-hmm. So you kind of roll with it a little bit. And I mean, and then in hindsight, or as it all played out, I kind of got swept into the community a little bit. And again, we're just so grateful to humbly try and contribute a fraction of what everyone else is contributing to this movement, but we're influenced by it. And mm-hmm. we're influenced by the Kentucky sound, and we're influenced by these different genres and these different sounds that have really originated throughout North America, and specifically Southeastern mm-hmm. America. So, I mean, that's how I met Byron, and he had since become such a dear friend. And you know, when he has this way of just knowing you need a phone call, it's like, you're struggling, and all of a sudden the dang phone rings, and it's Byron Roberts. And I've sort of made this unwritten rule that if no matter what I'm doing, and Belle can attest to this, that if it's my mother or it's Byron Roberts, I kind of drop what I'm doing and I accept the phone call. So yeah, it was really nice to see him up at Mountain Music Fest. Got my fingers crossed that he might come out to the show tonight, but I know he's an extremely busy guy. Mm-hmm. And if we don't see him at Kicking It this year, Belle got booked for Bristol Rhythm and Roots, as we were kind of chatting about off the air, and that happens to be the same weekend, so we had to move forward on taking that gig. But it's always something that whether we play Kicking It or not, every year there'll be at the very least the attempt to participate in it mm-hmm. in one form or another.
Now, you mentioned Tyler as kind of being spearhead of how this movement is just continuing to build. And I've had several artists on the show or that I've interviewed for other shows here at the station. And when I ask them specifically about, you know, they kind of refer to it around here as the Appalachian music movement, because so much of it is coming out of Appalachia. And I ask the question, where did this start to springboard and really take off? Because there's always been Appalachian music, but now there seems to be such a hunger for it from all over the world, that people want to hear this kind of thing. And they all go back to, well, Tyler Childers started sharing his opportunities. And one person, you know, got a hold of that. And now when they get opportunity, they're reaching back and helping to pull somebody else forward. When they get a gig, they mention, hey, if you like me, here's two or three others that you would love to have here, because it's the same style or it's a similar kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And they go back to that sharing of opportunity. And what a difference that has made.
Yeah, I think it's our generation. And I would like to say that it's specific to the Appalachian area, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And with that said, it's the Appalachian music that maybe is more deep-rooted in the American psyche than anything else. Like, I would argue country, quote-unquote country music started here. And the beauty of that is it's such an ethnic genre. You know, it's a combination. Like, bluegrass music has been this combination of Irish fiddle tunes and the African banjo, and like mm-hmm. just that, again, a melding pot. So I think the roots are deeply rooted in this area. So it's in the American psyche, maybe deeper than any other kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
But our generation is struggling right now with what the music industry is and how we're compensated fairly. And we all understand that it's just like the sky's big enough for all the stars. And if there's a movement that's happening, everybody can ride that wave, and everybody can get to the top. And it, the kind, I mean, there's competition, obviously, in different areas of music, but it's really akin, like, again, what's happening in the in the Appalachian movement, we're experiencing that in our home province of Saskatchewan. We have artists like Casey and Clayton. We have artists like Culture Wall. We have Megan Nash. We have Bell and myself trying to contribute to that. And it's just sort of everybody understands that we're not really in it for ourselves anymore. Why not get to the top with your friends? Why not be on the road with your friends? Why not see your friends succeed? And as far as Saskatchewan goes, like, our province has a history of building each other up. And our, you know, we have, obviously one of the differences in our countries is that we have a healthcare system where it's just sort of like everybody's kind of taken care of. And that was something that originated in Saskatchewan. There's the co-ops, which is sort of paying dividends out. That's something that originated in Saskatchewan. So we're really proud of that. I personally see, I recognize it in different communities throughout North America and frankly worldwide, I think. But it's the spirit's very, very strong down here.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that. And you know, when you say, how do we fan the flames? I mean, I think we already answered the question. It's by doing what Tyler has done. And that's to bring people with you, because it does create kind of a puzzle or a map that people get to follow. So, you know, Tyler has, like, you know, Tyler and Sturgill work together and Coulter and Tyler work together, and Coulter's worked with Blake and I've worked with Blake and I've worked with Casey and Clayton. And so you get to kind of, you know, make a little, like those little police crime scene maps where everybody's picture gets on the bulletin board, and you start to draw lines between everyone to see how the, you know, this Canadian and Appalachian family tree starts to connect.
Well, I think it's time that we take another break. Yeah, I've completely missed our weather and everything. So I just enjoy talking to you guys. I may just keep you. I don't know. But we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, you guys, are you going to play us some music? Or?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
we'd love to. I'm anxious to hear you. We're going to hear from our sponsors. You guys stay tuned. We'll have more with Blake and Belle. And welcome back. We are here in the studio with Blake Berglund and Belle Plain, all the way from Canada. And they are going to be playing a song for us. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be playing.
We're going to play a song that appeared on my last record called Crooked Old Earth. It was not the first co-write, but the second and possibly the most recent co-write that the two of us have done together. I think that's the truth. Belle wrote all the good lines. I filled in the rest.
Oh, and see, that was one of the things I was wanting to talk to you guys about earlier, is since I saw you last, you got married.
We got married. Yeah, we did.
Secrets out.
Yeah, like the first time I met you, you weren't married, and then you announced your engagement, and it was just like, oh, that is perfect.
Yeah, and we had a really, really nice little country wedding. It was December 27th. We got engaged the 8th of August, and I was watching Queer Eye on Netflix. Belle got me into the program, and she was away visiting her family, and I was catching up on some episodes, and Karomo, one of the gentlemen in that show, looked in the screen and was like, if you want to be a man, you got to be a man of action. And he spoke right to my gut.
Oh.
So I got up the next morning and went and I hunted out rings all day long and let them burn a hole in my pockets, and then went and got her grandma in a game of cribbage and some cards and asked her and swept my face off and got a nice little, we have a beautiful little dance hall back in Saskatchewan that has a history that includes Hank Snow, Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash.
Oh,
used
nice.
To route out of the States up into Saskatchewan to play this one dance hall and come back onto their route again. So a really strong history. And I called him up and asked if I could have it on lockdown for a few hours. And we went and practiced our dancing for a little bit. And then, boy, I started to sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And asked her.
Were you surprised?
No.
No!
She wasn't.
No, I saw it coming. I was driving around doing some errands because we were preparing to do a music video for my record. And I was kind of thinking to myself about how Blake had been keeping up on the dishes and just sort of been low maintenance the last little while, and very helpful and remarking on that privately while I was driving through the city. And then I realized, I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to ask me to marry him. And there was no indication, like he hadn't let the secret slip or anything. So, yeah, I saw it coming, and it was really more enjoyable for, you know, seeing it come at that distance.
And to watch me struggle my way through it and you smile on the other end.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, I mean, if you went to all that trouble, and I didn't tell anybody. That was the thing, is I thought, I'm not coming back into town after this and being like, nope, I was wrong. So I just kept my mouth shut and waited. And yeah, our engagement was just over 4 months, and that was, again, played large part because of my grandma Lila. She was kind of like, what are you waiting around for? You know, she's got that senior citizen attitude of like, if you wait too long, I might not be there. So
right.
Just get her done. And we did that.
We kind of hummed and hawed on a date. And there was a point where we were talking about fall of 2019, but that's harvest back at home. So summer 2019, well, that's haying season. Okay, well, spring of 2019, well, that's seeding. And it's just like everything is along the agricultural clock where we're from.
Exactly. Same here.
So we kind of figured, like, why don't we do a little Christmas thing? And we had about 90 of our closest family and music picking friends, and we had a little cabin up in northern Saskatchewan, and got married in a church that had a strong history with Belle and her family. And
it's true, I got three on the punch card: baptism, confirmation, marriage. So
one more.
Okay,
you got one more left.
So now you are co-writers and married.
Yeah, we're trying to co-write more and more. I've found that Belle's one of the few that I can actually feel good giving my stuff away to, that she can come back and it's just like, oh, that's absolutely a better song. And I'd like to think it works vice versa. We work well together in that aspect. And we've worked really hard, like anything, we've worked really hard at our relationship. We've worked really hard at our marriage. We spend every waking minute and every sleeping hour.
I need
hour.
A holiday, Angela. Yeah. I need a holiday from my husband.
She loves it.
I need a single honeymoon.
Uh-oh.
Where are you going to do that?
Anywhere.
We have a renovation coming up at our place, and her family's away for a little bit, or her aunt and uncle that live just outside of town, so we talked about each of us locking up in a couple different houses for a few weeks, and then what? Get back on the road together, hey?
Maybe.
I do love her.
It's obvious.
This one's called Crooked Old Earth. Kids in aeroplanes, anxiety in hurricanes, locusts swarm across the plains like we said they would. Whales litter in the beach, needles wash up on the streets, and you can make love to a computer screen for $6.99 a month. It's just a trip straight to the grave from the day of our birth. Wouldn't wish my enemy to this crooked old earth. Alcohol and broken homes, the illusions of what we own. We used up all the dinosaur bones and cars that we can't fix. At the altar of the TV stand, the puppets live in government. Well, country sucks and Buddy Holly's dead, and may the Starman cross quick. It's just a trip straight to the grave from the day of our birth. I wouldn't wish my enemy this crooked old earth.
If we all come back around, then it still just spins the same. I'll wait it out in another realm until something has changed. Banker broke, kind or cruel, innocent or black and blue, in the end she comes for you. It's just a trip straight to the grave from the day of our birth. I wouldn't wish my enemy to this crooked old earth. I wouldn't wish my enemy to this crooked old earth. I wouldn't wish my enemy.
Lovely. Enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Your voices together are just so soft and so complimentary. It's
Thank
beautiful.
You.
Very beautiful.
Thank
yeah.
You.
When we first got together, we kind of forced ourselves into it. Belle had a career that was almost a decade long. I had a career that was just over a decade long. And, you know, it was a romantic idea that we would be a couple and do the George and Tammy, do the Johnny and June, do the Ian and Sylvia thing. And it was a heck of a lot more difficult than I think either of us had anticipated. I was never a harmony singer. I was always the guy in the front. And she sang harmonies very well, but it was, again, you were always the person that was in the front. And we sort of had to, it was this moment where we had to like be like, man, we really got to get this together real bad. So we've been working hard at it. And as being as forgiving with each other as we possibly can be, because it's a difficult thing to do. But with the amount of time that we've put in together on stage and off stage and working on guitar stuff at the house, we're both getting to a point where we feel pretty confident stepping in front of a microphone together. Yeah. So
excellent.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Now, I think you said you were going to do a song too.
Yeah. I'm going to fact check Blake on two things.
Uh-oh.
My career was only about 5 years old as a professional musician.
What did I say?
Singer
decade?
Since a little girl, but and I was not a good harmony singer when we met.
Better than me.
I was.
Well, there you go. He says you were better than him, so.
That's his opinion, but yes. I'm going to do a song that you mentioned and you kindly held back from my Kickin' It set, because I wrote it for my neighbor, and I live in this condo in Regina that has a little balcony outside that's shared by myself and my neighbor. It's more, I guess it's technically a fire escape, but we use it as a little patio area like everyone else in the building. And by sharing that space, I got to know these people really well. And they just had such a great story that I followed along with over the 7 years that we live next to each other. And then in March of last year, after a very long health battle, the fella and the couple passed away. And I mean, I could talk forever about these two people because, you know, they're just such characters. But last year when we were here at Skybridge Station, we had some time afterwards where we were hanging out and chatting and throwing songs back and forth. And this was very new at that point. And the guys kind of urged me to play it. And I think at that point, you were the only one that had heard it, Blake.
I was going to say, it's one of the very first times you played for it.
Yeah.
Played it for anybody.
I was shaking because it was just like, you know, it was so new. It was so kind of, Al's death was new at that point. And I was reading the lyrics that were, you know, it's like a longer song. So I had, there was like a page turn in the middle of it. And, you know, I kind of messed some things up because I wasn't quite ready to do it. And still, like, it's on only some occasions that I play it. So I'm going to play it for you because you were so kind to do the things that you did. So this is for Alan Sharifa back home in Regina, Saskatchewan. And it is currently being called Two Packs a Day. It's a love song of sorts.
We might be a love story, though not one it would see. between two stars in Hollywood on your flat screen TV. But what could be more genuine in matters of the heart than keeping true that sacred vow until death do us part? I like that you were handy, didn't have too much to say. You love to watch the reruns and smoke two packs a day. When I went through all the trouble to live a single life again, I saw my problems could be traced back to my taste in men. And I'm fairly sure that sentiment occurred in your own thoughts the day you finally found a way to shake that first wife off. One day I had a dumb grin on my face, and then I knew that my goose was really cooked, 'cause I was thinking about you. Not long after we were married, resolutions all ignored, and we found us an apartment on the second floor. Whenever we felt restless, we'd up and hit the road. Never sure where we were headed, just start the engine up and go. Patios and parties, you mix the drinks, I'll just toke. And we'll do our best to laugh at how life is one big joke. There's no way to tell for certain what is choice and what is fate. So you go about the task of making what life you can make. I wonder how you felt when you took that final breath, and what it was you saw on the other side of death. Now everyone deserves their peace when this earthly world goes black. And I know you never found a place you didn't feel like you were trapped. So beginning of next month, we'll take a road trip headed west. And somewhere on the Yellowhead, I'll lay it down to rest. I'll open up the window, play your haggard cash and pride. Let the breeze suck you free from out the driver's side. It reminds me of that Dylan song that always made you cringe. But I hope you find your answers blowing in the wind. I like that you were handy, didn't have too much to say. You love to watch the reruns and smoke two packs a day. You love to watch the reruns and smoke two packs a day.
Belle Plaine, was that not incredible? Such a beautiful voice, and that song is just,
thank you.
It's very moving. It is very, very moving.
Thanks. It's kind of like, to be honest, and to maybe let the cat out of the bag a bit early, I'm almost afraid to say it, but I'm gonna. I want to focus on unconventional love songs to write about, because I just think that's a lot more interesting. You know, they're such an interesting couple, and their love was really challenging. And I think that we're in a period where we don't know a whole lot about conflict resolution. And that's such a big part of a friendship and a marriage, is to not just write each other off. And I can't remember who said it, it might have even been Mother Teresa, then this may be a big paraphrase, but the sentiment is that if you want to change the world, go home and look after your family. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's so true, because if you're able to live that at home with the people that you love and see the differences in your opinion in a marriage, because you're going to have them and keep going, then that's something to take out into the world. So for me, that's kind of where my head is at for writing for this next record. So if you have strange love songs, Belplane at bellplanemusic.com, just tell me your love story, how weird it is, and we'll see what we can cook up.
It sounds great, but actually, you know, I think if we all took the time to look at different love stories, probably these weird love stories are all around us.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It's just we don't have the time to get into depth with people often to learn all those details.
But. Yeah. But it's so rewarding for me as a songwriter. You know, like I went through the phase of songwriting where I was writing about, you know, my breakups and my heartbreak. But then those songs didn't have a lot of life in them. There wasn't any food value when I got on stage and I was singing them. But when I started writing about the people that I loved, or reconciliation with, you know, family members that I had difficulty with, I wrote about that and my father and I never really got along, and he passed away, and that was where it ended for us, I thought. But after a few years, it took me, you know, sitting down and writing a song and seeing what he struggled with in his life for me to love him in a different way. So I don't know. I mean, as a songwriter, I get pretty into my own heart. And Blake kind of jokes that my superpower is making people cry at my shows. And it's true. You know, I'm trying to get a bit more fun so I can get some fun honky-tonk gigs as well as the singer-songwriter, you know, make you weep kind of shows. But we're working on it.
Well, we enjoy what you're doing, and thank you all so much for coming. And you mentioned your website. Definitely, I want you guys to make sure folks know where to find you and find more of you. So,
yeah, it's as easy as a Google, Blake, B-L-A-K-E, Berglund, B-E-R-G-L-U-N-D, and it's blakeberglund.com and Blake Berglund on all the social medias. Yeah, that's where my stuff lives.
Yeah, and mine is tricky spelling. It can get people, but Belplane, like in Belplane, Kansas. So B-E-L-L-E, Plane, P-L-A-I-N-E, and social media, it's Belplane Music everywhere. So fairly easy to find.
All right, and tonight, the show at Skybridge Station. Folks that are local, that is not far. If you can hear me and you are listening via our terrestrial our reach out of our transmitter, then you're not too far away to come tonight. And it is a free show. It is going to include Chelsea Nolan as well. So it's going to be a great time, I'm sure.
Please come. It'll be wonderful.
And then you said you're playing tomorrow at?
Tomorrow night at Laurel Cove. I believe it's been changed to the, mm-hmm. I did bring it up, and then my phone went.
I think it's the
down on me. It's the
conference
resort.
Center at Pine Mountain State Resort Park.
Yeah,
is where it's been moved to because of the threat of rain.
Because the threat of rain, so it's been moved inside. And yeah, our sets, we're playing as our duo, Belplane and Blake Berglund duo, and it's on it where we hit the stage at 6 o'clock, and then some of our favorite acts are following, and Nicholas Jameson and Justin Wells and Arlo, mm-hmm. Arlo McKinley. And then tomorrow is a whole whack of our favorite artists. So we're hanging around. So we're just really.
You mean Saturday?
Yeah, that's what I meant, Saturday. Yeah. Friday, we played 6 o'clock Friday night, tomorrow night. And then Saturday, we're hanging around. And then we're jumping in the car and headed north Sunday, and we're back.
We're back in September. We'll be coming through the area, and we've got some stuff with Chelsea lined up already for September. And
it's safe to say September 18th, we're at the Burl in Lexington with our full five-piece band. So
fantastic.
Yes.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us and playing for us. And thank you for doing what you do. We're loving it. Keep doing it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the Southern hospitality, as always.
All right. Well, folks, we are going to take a break. Actually, we're going to go to the news, I think, because, we missed our news cue, too. This has just been too much fun. All right. You have been listening to Bluegrass Breakout here on Pickup Country 104.9 FM WSKV with Blake Berglund and Belle Plain. You guys stay tuned. We are getting ready to go to the news, and we'll be back with more great music.
Hi, this is Casey Campbell of Buffalo Wobbs and the Price Hill Hustle, and you're listening like a local to Pickup Country 104.9 FM.